What would lead the Sabbath School Quarterly editors to include a lesson on resurrections before the cross in this quarter's lineup? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, host and study guide author for our discussions this quarter on life everlasting, on death, dying, and the future hope. I'm Professor Emeritus of Biblical Studies from Walla Walla University School of Theology. My conversation partners are Jody Washburn and Dave Thomas. They are also from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. So, why talk about resurrections before the cross? What were the editors up to? Anybody want to guess?
I mean, how would we know what they were up to, Alden? We can't read their motivations.
No, but they clustered a whole bunch of them, and we could go over them. It's really an interesting collection. The first one is the most troublesome because it's Moses. All we have in Deuteronomy is this interesting phrase, "and he buried him." It doesn't say who buried him. It just simply says, "he buried him." And then there are stories that there was, and we find traces of this in the New Testament, where they wrestled over the body of Moses. But our quarterly then quotes New Testament, where Moses is there on Mount of Transfiguration. So that's one, and as I say, it's rather a curious one. But then you have the widow of Zarephath, 1 Kings 17. Then you have the Shunammite woman, 2 Kings 4. Then you have the son of the widow of Nain in Luke 7-11. And Jairus' daughter, Mark 5. All of these were before the cross. And then perhaps the most interesting one is Lazarus. And it might be worth our while simply to take a few minutes to read the story of Lazarus. This is a resurrection before the cross. Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was born in Bethany, village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Martha, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "The sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days, then said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. Let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him. But Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though he die. And whoever lives by believing in me, he will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. After she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. And when the Jews had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who'd come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Now, why would Jesus raise a man just to have him die again? It's a pretty powerful passage in terms of non-immortality of the soul. There's a body, you die, and there's no soul that escapes. But why are these stories, all of these, so important to happen before the cross, and they are recorded as happening before the cross?
You know, I'm not sure I know how to answer your question, Alden. I will go on a little tangent here, and that will help redeem Martha. You know, Martha gets dinged a lot because of the other story where she was serving food and Mary wasn't. And I tell people, you would all like to live in Martha's house. But her confession that Jesus is the Lord is a very early one, and she should be noted for that, for being one of the people who first proclaimed the Lordship of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So how do you answer your question about the resurrection before the crucifixion?
My guess is that the editors were simply trying to say God has power to raise people.
Because Daniel, of course, I mean, Daniel makes a promise of a resurrection. He doesn't cite an instance, but I mean, mm-hmm. it's a very touching picture when he says to Daniel, who's an old man and somewhat confused, look, you will rest with your fathers, with your ancestors, mm-hmm. but you'll have a place in the kingdom. And he goes on to talk about a resurrection, a grand resurrection.
But it's not, I mean, that is known by Old Testament scholars as the first clear reference to a resurrection at the end of time.
Yeah, at the end of time.
But It's not the complete resurrection that you find in the New Testament, but still, it is a resurrection at the end of time.
It's a good start.
It's a good start, yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can think about here is that to resurrect somebody, what if the crucifixion had never taken place with those people they were all dead anyway, except for Lazarus by the time of the crucifixion. I mean, when you read that there, it sounds to me like Jesus is making a point that death is not the last word for those who believe in him. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's not the message that people got in time or in all those other instances, that God has power even over death.
Mm-hmm. And it's not directly tied to the cross.
No, but I mean, you hate to think what would happen if if in the Garden of Gethsemane Jesus had said, I'm out of here, you know.
Think a similar point, I mean, what you just said, that these pictures send the clear message that death is not the end of the story. So did the cross. So in many ways, that thread runs right through.
Yeah, and I mean, it's an astonishing thing how a death becomes, in some senses, the fulcrum on which religious history tips, you know. I mean, I heard somebody just this last week talking about the fact that, you know, the early Christians proclaimed as their savior a man who was accused of blasphemy and crucified, which was the most despicable death that could be inflicted on a person. If you were crucified, you were one of the dregs of society, and now they're proclaiming him to be Lord and Savior. I mean, that's quite a jump.
Well, it's interesting. In the Old Testament, he who is cursed is anyone who is hung on a tree.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got that remarkable reversal there.
But, I mean, this, of course, touches on the great Christian hope that I like what I think it was N.T. Wright has pointed out, that the hope of eternity in the Bible does not hang on the presence of an apparently immortal soul, but it hangs on the promise of resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one piece of Adventist theology that I think fits very nicely together. If your soul has already gone to its destiny, what do we need a resurrection for?
Hmm.
And I know there are answers in those who believe that, but I think they're not very substantial. That we die and we rot away in our tombs, but then God can bring us back to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the Old Testament, we hadn't discussed this. There wasn't a time when we could have. But the Old Testament concept, when you die, you go down to Sheol. And by the way, that's often translated as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the cold hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not a
murky place where the dead people live.
Yeah. Where you're gathered to your fathers.
Mm. It's a three-layer cosmology, we would say. The heavens, the earth, and the underworld.
Yeah. And we could,
and they're all quite close to each other. They're not. You don't have to travel mm-hmm. long distance from heaven to hell.
Just take the elevator down or up. Well, I think it's very important to see that there is a restoration, and there is the power of God, and you have all these examples of the power of God that are really very important. To sum up, we've looked at the biblical examples of resurrection before the cross. The son of the widow of Zarephath, son of the Shunammite woman, son of the widow of Nain, Jairus' daughter, and Lazarus. Even though Jesus had not yet died and risen again, these were all hopeful signs of the great resurrection to come. My thanks to Dave Thomas, Jody Washburn, my conversation partners, to Kristen Byerly, our program engineer, and to each of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.